As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Welcome to 5,000 to 1, the Athletic's Leicester City podcast. I'm Rob Tanner. Joining me once again is Leicester City legend, the former captain, and my co-host, Matt Elliott. How are you doing, Matt?
Very good, Rob. Thank you very much. Hope you're the same.
Yeah, and you, mate. I hope you're keeping warm because it was absolutely freezing at Stoke at the weekend, and I've only just thawed out, I think, from that one. But I suppose the win was enough to warm up the Leicester fans listening today. I mean, it was a pretty resounding victory against Stoke and into the hat for the fourth round of the FA Cup, just what the doctor ordered.
Yeah, certainly was, wasn't it? And I was actually covering a game at the stadium, the King Power, so I didn't have the dubious pleasure of attending the game at the Bet365 stadium, as it is these days, I believe. But I've got a couple of natural extra layers these days, so I don't feel the cold too much, Rob. But yeah, it was pretty comprehensive, wasn't it? I think the first thing probably worth mentioning is the team selection, really.
Yes.
I mean, that caught a few people, myself included, a little bit unawares, because not that Leicester needed to desperately, in terms of the games are not overly condensed at the moment, but you would think, all things considered, that there would have been certainly more changes. And he had the capability to, I mean, we spoke about it in the last show, that he could literally change all 11, really, and still have a good enough team, I believe, to go and do the job against the likes of Stoke. But he went with Maddison and Vardy aside, pretty much as strong as he could. And like I say, it took a few people at back, probably Stoke as well. They probably thought, maybe we've got a sneaky outside chance here. They saw the lineup and thought, oh, maybe we're not going to win the FA Cup this year. And so it turned out to be, didn't it? Because, I mean, Stoke were pedestrian, really, weren't they? I'm disappointed in them. But Leicester, ultimately, very efficient, weren't they? We'll go on to mention the details of the game in a minute, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just for those listeners, there was only two changes to the starting line. I was anticipating more similarly to you, Matt. I mean, I did a piece last week looking at Danny Ward's situation at the club. He's been at the club 2.5 years. He's only made 12 appearances and they paid £12.5 million for him. So it's over £1 million an appearance at the moment. But Kasper Schmeichel is so important to Leicester, and certainly increasingly so under Brendan Rodgers being the captain, that he was always going to play, I suppose. But I was expecting a few other changes. I mean, some of those players, like James Justin, have played every minute of the Premier League, and Johnny Evans has become so important to them. You wondered whether they were going to risk him with Siunsu coming back as well. But strong lineup. But let's talk about James Justin, because he played left back this time. We've seen him on the right. We've seen him on the outside of a back three. He's so versatile. But one thing I didn't know he had in his locker was the goal that he scored that broke the deadlock and set Leicester on the way to the victory. I mean, that was an outstanding strike.
He didn't seem that surprised either, did he? As if, he's certainly done it regularly in training. But just quickly on you're talking about, the team selection. I think it shows to me that Brendan Rodgers has got, one, massive trust in his players themselves, but also massive trust in the backroom staff and the medical department, really, there, because they look at everything, don't they? And they must think, you know, the next game is not till this weekend. So there is an opportunity to sort of gather things together. But you thought it might have a little bit of an impact, you know, down the line when, in February, when there's a massive congestion of fixtures. And also it's a sign of intent, isn't it? Fighting on three fronts in three different competitions. But, you know, he's doing his best and his damnedest to get as far as he can in every one of those. But James Justin, oh, I know, I mean, he's yet another player, isn't he, that, you know, is developing, and rapidly so, in Leicester's ranks. You know, you've got the, like, Maddison and Didi and Barnes, everyone talks about them, and obviously the, you know, the regulars, Evans and Vardy, Schmeichel, etc. But there's always someone emerging through, isn't there? Now, Chilwell's been and gone, and that strike was almost a sort of confirmation of his confidence in himself and his development, isn't it? You know, he's coming. He maybe wouldn't have done that early on, but now he's got that much belief in himself because he knows he's performed against the highest level of opposition in different positions, in different situations, and he's never gone under. You know, he's always performed well, reacted positively to situations, and he must be looking at himself, looking over his shoulder, thinking, I did all right there, didn't I? I genuinely am a, you know, top-level player. And I think you saw that culminate in his strike against Stoke. And he'll only go on and get and benefit from that and get better and better. But he's not bad as he is now, is he?
Well, I wonder whether he's thinking England, really. Yeah. I mean, at the moment, I mean, they've had a few... I mean, it looked like it was a position that was locked down for England under Gareth Southgate. But certainly, there's going to be an opportunity there in the future. And he must be thinking, if he keeps this form going, if he chips in with a few more strikes like that as well, because we know how modern fullbacks, they've got to be able to attack, they've got to be able to create, they've got to be able to score goals as well. And he's certainly encouraged to get in the box as much as he possibly can under Brendan Rodgers. He's got an outside chance.
Well, he does that naturally. He's such a supreme athlete. And again, I've mentioned it a couple of times when we've been talking about, got to watch him for Leicester, ironically, against Luton, his old club. But you're right up close and personal against the near the pitch there. And he just cruises, like galloped up and down that right-hand flank as it was on that evening. And it was like instantly struck by that. He just glides into areas, and now he's getting that encouragement from his manager, you know, get forward, supply ammunition, even get on the end of ammunition as well. You know, he's in and around the penalty box, and it suits him. He's more than happy with that, isn't he? He's not one who says, well, hang on, am I going to get back and defend? He's got the physical capability for that. He'll probably be having a little word, as he did on Saturday, with his manager and say, listen, Gaffer, you couldn't play me left back, could you? Because there's too many on the right side for England. And he switched with Castagna, didn't he? And because on the face of it, I say there's only Chilwell to go up against, isn't there? Sure, to a level. And people are comparing him and Chilwell at the moment, aren't they? Even I've heard some Chelsea supporters thinking, hang on a minute, we maybe got the wrong fullback here. Not that Ben's not doing well, but James Justin, they look at him and think maybe he's got some different qualities that might be well utilised on the national arena. But listen, if he carries on as he is, he's got to have every chance, that's for sure.
Well, it's that versatility that really puts him in the frame, isn't it? Because obviously, if you go to a tournament, a player that can play numerous positions is worth his weight in gold. But let's talk about another versatile player, Jose Perez. Now, Jose, I expected with Jamie out, we knew Jamie was going to be missing because Brendan said in the pre-match press conference, but we expected Kelechi Iheanacho, I would have thought, to have started as the number nine. But no, it was Jose Perez, and I thought, what an excellent display. I know a few people on social media, I've said he struggled to get into the game, but I thought he was very much involved in linking play. He was dropping deep. He's not a Vardy. He never is going to be a Vardy. It's going to run him behind, stretch defences. But he's so intelligent in the way he drops in. And as long as he's got runners running past him, like Harvey Barnes, and people breaking the lines like Dennis Pratt, then he's so effective in that role. It's almost like a Roberto Firmino-type role at Liverpool for when Jose plays as number nine. It certainly does give Brendan a different option.
Yeah, it does. It does. And I think he's probably become a little bit frustrated with Kelechi Iheanacho. It's another option. You know, they're different players, aren't they, Perez and Iheanacho? But I think, I'm not saying his opportunities are done and dusted, but I think he was, with Jamie Vardy not being available, Brendan Rodgers has has obviously considered, you know, okay, what else can I do? When I first saw the lineup, I thought even Harvey Barnes might be centre forward because he's been employed there, I think, in an FA Cup game. I'm not sure if it was last season or season before. He's capable of that as well. I don't think it comes naturally to him. But more orthodox choice is Jose Perez. I mean, you know, he forged his reputation as a striker, didn't he, really? Certainly in this country, or a forward, central forward player, shall we say, at Newcastle. But, yeah, he's not dynamic, and he's not one to frighten the life out of opposition defenders. But he's got a cleverness about his play, haven't you? And I see what you're saying about the Firmino comparison, because, yeah, he picks up good positions. When he's on song, on form, you know, he's a delight to watch, and he's got a lovely touch. He's got good vision and awareness. And on his, again, on his day, talk about frustration with Iheanacho. I'd be frustrated if I was Jose Perez, certainly if I was his coach, because I think he's a good finisher. But it's just the regularity of his execution is not there. Like, you know, he can finish with some delightful touches and, you know, little clips around the keeper, where it leads a little bit of loft and placement, etc. But then, you know, golden opportunity is wasted with a little bit of a weak finish or a little bit lazy, it comes across as. So, but, I mean, he's no young lad anymore, is he? You know, he should be sort of learning that aspect of his game. But playing in that central role at the weekend, I'm with you, a little bit like Leicester's performance. The longer the game went on, the better he got. And the better the Leicester got, he just sort of helped pick holes in Stoke, didn't he, at times? And obviously finished his goal well. I mean, that was typical Leicester goal, wasn't it? He played across Dennis Pratt. Castagne, the right fullback, is in a centre-forward position, just helps it along. Perez takes his time and slots it away coolly, like any good striker would. And, you know, he looks the part, doesn't he, on occasion. But, I think certainly right now is a better option than Iheanacho.
I certainly think he's better down the middle as well. I know he's played as the inverted wide man on the right most of his Leicester career under Brendan Rodgers, but certainly when he's around that central areas, I think he's a lot more effective. But let's move on to another goal scorer, a rare goal scorer, Mark Albrighton. First goal in 2 years for Leicester City. Now, the interesting thing about Mark for me is whenever people write him off, and I certainly think sometimes, well, perhaps, you know, when he's out of the team and he's not getting a game, you think, well, is that his race run for Leicester City? He comes back. He is a fighter, isn't he? He's got a great attitude, and he's got back into the side under Brendan, playing in that advanced wide right role. Now, the one aspect of his game that he admits himself that he has to improve is his final ball and goals. He's got to add goals. But he took his goal ever so well. And Brendan's referred to him as his soldier, but because his defensive work and his running, his willingness is unquestionable. But when he starts adding goals like that, you know, he is a top player.
Yeah, it's, you know, when Mark's scoring goals, you know, things are going well for you, don't you? It's funny, isn't it? Some players, like, he can deliver a ball as well as anyone in that squad. But he's got a decent strike on him, but he doesn't get too many opportunities on his right foot. He has to cut inside, as he did at the weekend, but it was a little bit closer range than normal. And he got enough on it, didn't he? I think the keeper will be slightly disappointed, in truth. But it was a decent enough finish. But it's good to see, from Leicester's point of view, you know, now the goals are being shared around, and Perez, Barnes, Maddison, Tielemans. But, yeah, Mark Albrighton, I think, more often than not, it comes down to a choice between himself and Perez, doesn't it? Who's more often not been forced out in that wide forward role. I agree with you, by the way. I think, you know, he's more suited centrally. Not going to get the opportunities Perez this is, but because of Vardy, he's going to be limited, isn't it? But, I mean, possibly in that number 10 role as well, you know, if other players are not available. But
he's played there at Newcastle. As a number 10, he played behind Solomon Rondon, and apparently, according to the guys that cover Newcastle for The Athletic, he was most effective in that role as a number 10 playing off Rondon. Perhaps that's, I mean, obviously you've got Maddison, probably one of the best number 10s in the Premier League at the moment.
Well, there's your problem, yeah.
But it's a great problem.
Yeah, exactly. Good problems all over the pitch, isn't it? You know, centre-half, the full-backs. There's competition for places, certainly. But Albrighton, quite rightly, is keeping his place regularly in the big games. And he gives reliability, doesn't he, to the manager. He talks about tagging him with that name, you know, the soldier. But he's got a little bit of the cavalier as well. He's got a little bit of flair about him as well. In terms of, it often goes unnoticed, really. Does not necessarily spectacular, but he's integral to a lot of Leicester's play, you know, quite regularly. His link ups with Vardy that you've mentioned before, you know, crucial in away games regularly. And obviously his delivery, and hopefully he's on a goal scoring run now.
Well, I think the issue with Albrighton is he's so selfless. He sacrifices those sort of moments of personal glory for the greater good. And he's done that throughout his career, certainly at Leicester City. He doesn't get into the box very often. We talk about, you know, his lack of goals. It's because he doesn't get himself into those situations very often. He tends to provide the width, stays outside, trying to be the supply line rather than be the end product. And but if he could just balance that up a little bit and get in the box more, there'll be more goals for him to come.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
One negative from the afternoon was another injury. Dennis Pratt limping off towards the end, racing onto a through ball. Looked like he had another chance at a fifth goal and pulled up, limped. I suppose the only good sign was really he was able to walk back down the tunnel. Because when they're really bad hamstrings, when they go really bad, then it's a stretcher job, isn't it? But so hopefully, fingers crossed, that won't be too bad. But another injury. Just when you think everybody's getting back and it's all starting to clear up. We've got Ricardo not far away now. Soyuncu was back, came on as well at Stoke. You pick up another one. It's a shame, but it's the way the season is, isn't it? It was so condensed with all the games.
Yeah, although, I mean, you look at Dennis Pratt's situation there. I mean, he hasn't had an overload of games, has he? You know, he's been involved his fair share throughout the course of the season, and he's done reasonably well the majority of the time. But and someone like him as well, you know, he's a good athlete, isn't he? And like, you know, it's all round fitness about his game, and you know, and it's solid. And you think, you know, with the lack of game time that he's had, really, that he would be okay. But no, it's caught him out there, hasn't it? I think he typified Leicester a bit on Saturday as well. I think, you know, the longer the game went on, the better he got. Because it sometimes frustrates me, because I think there's a really good player waiting to get out, and there's an element of sort of jack of all trades, master of none sometimes. But maybe that's because he has to play in a variety of positions. But I think he's someone who's just waiting to really click. And he was involved, obviously, in Perez's goal, which gave him a boost. But then it's typified his time at Leicester a little bit, hasn't it? He's there, and he's just been maybe gaining a bit of confidence and pleased with himself, and suddenly, ping, that goes. And then, seemingly he's going to be out for, I don't know, a couple of weeks or so, maybe. Hopefully not too long. But, I mean, he just got caught out. The ball seemed to sort of, like, bump up off the pitch a bit, and he tried to react to it, maybe. You know, just trying to lift his leg up that extra bit at pace to control it, and it seemed to tweak then, didn't it? But, yeah, big disappointment for him. But, in all honesty, I think Leicester, as long as it's not too long, an injury, I think Leicester will be able to cope with it in the short term, with the quality that they've got in the squad.
Well, it certainly will be factored into their thinking around the transfer window. Now, Brendan's been fairly consistent about the fact that Leicester won't be looking to do much business. But there was a little slight change in the message in the pre-match press conference last week before the Stoke game, when he was when he revealed about Hamza Chowdhury. Not only Hamza Chowdhury possibly going out on loan, although he said that wasn't ideal, that wasn't his preferred option. It was to sell Hamza. And I know we discussed Hamza quite a lot in the last podcast. But well, I wonder whether Dennis Pratt's injury now might force a rethink there. But interesting that he's looking to do business. And if there are some outgoings, they'll discuss whether they can bring somebody in to replace them. Now, there is one possible outgoing that's edging closer, and that's Islam Slimani, the longest transfer saga ever, I can remember. I mean, he seems to have been linked here, there and everywhere, going out of the club for the last 3 years. Looks like Leon are going to sign him, take him on for the rest of the season. Well, I imagine with a view to a permanent as well, because he's coming to the end of his deal. But so Slimani to Lyon, that's been going on for such a long time now, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, it seems incredible that he's still at the club, isn't it? Been a bit of a saga, hasn't it? Never really worked from the off, although he had little patches, didn't he, where he was effective and saw a rerun of a goal he got against Liverpool, I think it was, which I totally forgot about, which was a wonderful strike in his early days at Leicester. But yeah, it's been a strange old affair, hasn't it? And I'm sure he's going to jump at the chance to go to Lyon if the deal works for him. Beautiful place. I've been over there myself in times gone by, and not a bad place to live, not a bad place to work either. But yeah, I mean, there were rumours a while ago about him going over to China and various other places, weren't there? But surely for his own benefit, his own good, as well as probably everyone else's, he needs to make that move, doesn't he? I mean, I don't know if he's been sort of sticking around for financial reasons or what.
Oh, yeah. The main problem's been the contract he's on at Leicester is so good that nobody else could match that. So he's not going to get those earnings anywhere else. So he's going to sit and take those earnings as best as he can. He's coming towards the end of his career. He's in his early 30s now. So I imagine that's been the big issue. Just switching it back to Hamza, though. Were you surprised to hear that, that Brendan saying he's open to a permanent deal?
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, we spoke last week, didn't we? Seeing, expecting that, okay, Hamza was sort of on the periphery of things, maybe a little loan period with the ability to, or facility to be able to call him back if necessary. Maybe, you know, it's a little bit of not a kick up the backside for Hamza, but it's certainly a little bit of a warning for him, you know, really sort of knuckle down a little bit. Although I think Brendan Rodgers, he might maybe have come across the wrong way, because I think he likes Hamza. I think he likes Hamza as a character. I remember the pre-season of last campaign, and Cambridge it was, I think, and speaking to Brendan Rodgers, and he had a little glint in his eye when he was speaking about Hamza, I think, because he's a likeable personality, is Chowdhury, and I think Brendan's got his best interests at heart, so I think he'll be treated well, Hamza. But yeah, it's just a sign of the times. Leicester have got an abundance of quality players. I suppose, how do you accommodate all of them? But I'm sure Hamza will be looking to stay at the club as long as he can, if he gets a choice in the situation.
I wonder whether you're right there about it being just a shot across his bows to knuckle down, really, because I can't see many clubs being able to spend money in this January transfer window. The COVID situations, it's impacting everywhere. And I think probably the reality is for Leicester, having spent £100 million on a new training ground and having no match day revenue, that Brendan might have to sell to buy. He might have to generate his own transfer kitty. I know the club will try and support him if he really needs something desperately, and I'm sure they would find the finances to do that. But I think wonder whether he's thinking, if Hamza goes for, say, I don't know, £10 million, he can reinvest that himself. But I can't see anybody paying £10 million.
It's going to be interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's been pretty quiet, hasn't it, the January transfer window? And it'd be very interesting to see what happens at the end of the season, isn't it? Yeah, I don't think you're certainly going to get the levels that you have done previously, even with the big hitters out there. Everyone's going to have to be a little bit more prudent, aren't they, for one reason or another. But, yeah, it brings a different challenge, doesn't it? But I mean, Leicester's recruitment policy has, by and large, been pretty positive, though, hasn't it? So they'll be confident they can fare better than most.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Another area that they'll probably be looking at as well is in attack with, because we're looking at the bench on Saturday and there was only Kelechi Iheanacho forward on that bench. It was a very defensive bench because he didn't have any options. Under has got an ankle issue, hopefully won't be out for too long. Damari Grace is so far out of the picture now. I mean, I should imagine Damari will be heading out somewhere, although Brendan said afterwards there's been no actual offers, but there has been inquiries. There has been interest in Damari Gray, whose contract expires at the end of this season, and he's refused to sign a new one because he wants more regular first-team football. But it does raise the question, are they a little bit light in attack?
If anywhere needs reinforcing, it is in the attacking areas, isn't it? I think, you know, Perez being flexible and adaptable, as he showed at the weekend, is, you know, is a little bit of a bonus. We knew that already, but, you know, it gives an extra option for Brendan Rodgers, doesn't it? And, yeah, a little bit like, because Undo's hasn't quite sort of clicked just yet, has he? And a little bit stop-start, isn't it? Now another little niggling injury and he's feeling his way. So he can't be sort of relied upon at top end Premier level at this moment in time. Similarly, with Kelechi, I think, you know, Brendan's reluctant to start him. They are not threadbare, but they are a little bit thin on genuine quality there, aren't they? We've spoken before about, you know, someone who can play central but also wide effectively. There aren't too many players like that, you know, who are going to become available because they're much valued. But having said that, strikers have, you know, had to learn to become a little bit more adaptable, really, because, you know, it's changed, hasn't it? You know, sometimes you're not always asked to play as that out and out striker. They have to be, well, a cross between a wide man and a forward, don't they, at times as well, be flexible, you know, in a front three, which is regularly played these days. So I'm sure they'll be scouting far and wide to look for options because, I mean, you say Damari Gray, basically, again, it looks a bit of a financial situation. And, you know, there's probably part of Brendan Rodgers thinks, well, maybe that wouldn't be such a bad thing every now and then to have Damari available. But I think that situation's done and dusted now, isn't it? He got a surprising outing against Crystal Palace, didn't he? And I think that's probably the final nail in the coffin as far as Gray's concerned. But, yeah, if not this window, I think perhaps at the end of the season, that's the one area that needs to be looked at.
Absolutely. Well, COVID obviously is still having a massive impact, not just on the finances of football clubs like Leicester City, but on the game in general. And so far, football has been able to carry on, even though we're now back in another national lockdown with further restrictions possibly going to be imposed very shortly on everyday life. And it's been raised several times. Steve Bruce, the Newcastle manager, has raised it. I heard Gary Rowett raise it as well, talking about whether we need to have a pause in football. With everything that's going on and the infection rates soaring to record levels, is it now time for the game just to take a break for a while until the infection levels come down? Because we are starting to see numbers of infections within in camps, training grounds being shut down, fixtures being cancelled. We understand Aston Villa's game against Tottenham is now off later this week because of their outbreak at Aston Villa, and Fulham look like they're stepping in, rearranging the fixtures. Do you think now we need to just have a little break, or is it for the greater good of society to have some sort of escapism through football, the role that it plays in lifting people's spirits? Should they carry on regardless?
Well, I don't think they should carry on regardless, no. I think that is a factor to consider, isn't it? But you know, from a health point of view, there's going to be governmental guidance, aren't there? You know, if it gets to a certain phase, but probably before that point, you know, decisions should be maybe made by the governing bodies concerned. But if it starts to affect the credibility of the tournament or the competition, then, you know, then it does become a little bit farcical, just in, you know, in the sense of the football itself, not even looking at the health aspect of it. You know, winning the competitions, partaking in the competitions means a little bit less, doesn't it? If teams can't field a full-strength team and they've got to play the fixtures out, or games are cancelled, and people's appetite for the game is, you know, is gonna drift. And I think it's always been a danger, hasn't it? You know, it's been lurking in the background. People have been hoping that it's not going to happen and wishing for the best and thinking, oh yeah, we're out of it here, we're out of the worst point, and the football can continue. But you've got to be realistic, haven't we? Now, certainly, in my mind, if it gets any worse, it affects the sort of genuineness of the competition. And obviously, health-wise, it's going to be a massive issue, isn't it? I think certain teams haven't been able to field a first 11, have they? They've had the kids out. We've seen it happen a number of times in the FA Cup over the weekend. Teams are doing all they can. They'll be desperate to keep it on, won't they? But I don't think they should do it recklessly. You don't want to get the situation where it gets cancelled totally and all this effort has been relatively worthless. But if they have a break, though, Rob, how long can they have a break for? What with the Euros supposedly meant to be coming up in the summer? How long would they be able to get away with it for? I don't know.
It's absolutely... I mean, there's so much to factor in, really, in terms of schedules. But I suppose, ultimately, it's the safety of the people involved in the game that is a paramount importance. Yeah. And I think once it starts becoming an even greater risk to health and to the infection levels spreading, then they might have to make a decision at the with the strict, stringent testing that is being done at Premier League clubs. You hope that they can keep a lid on it for a while. But this FA week would have been interesting, you know, certainly with Premier League sides going up against lower league teams that won't be in such a regular basis because of the fans of that. So it's going to be interesting what sort of impact we have over the next week or so. Hopefully none. But it's strange times, Matt. It is strange times, isn't it?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, Rob, if it's the government who make any sort of decision or the Premier League themselves who might say, listen, this is not working properly. You know, but, like I say, I'm sort of affecting the validity of the competition or the reputation of it even, or will the government consider it an out-and-out health issue and lock on it themselves? Hopefully that point doesn't come, but I don't think it's too far away, unfortunately.
No, well, Matt, you stay safe. All our listeners out there, please stay safe as well. Keep checking back on The Athletic as well. We'll try and keep you entertained during these dark times. And we'll be back as well with another edition of 5001. Hopefully, we still have plenty of football to talk about. Thank you, Matt. We'll see you again next week.
Cheers, Rob. Pleasure as always. Take care.
Cheers.
The Athletic.